death trap. It's a suicide.
I love him.
We gotta get out while we're
young. I love Bruce Springsteen. And I want to go back to what we were talking about a little bit, but I've always loved him, but I didn't have that special extra love for him until I got his, I don't remember what it's called, but it's not the best of, but it's like, you know, the I don't know, like everything he's done, whatever that CD is. It's like a double CD.
Anthology?
Something like that, yes. And so I started, you know, I love that had the words, the lyrics included. So I love to learn the lyrics. And as I was learning the lyrics, I mean, this was just about 10 years ago. It really, really hit me. And I know everybody already knows this, but it hit me then. Actually, it was more than like 15 years ago, that he's such a poet.
Poet.
I mean, he is like, oh my God, is he a poet? I mean, my favorite band of all time is the Rolling Stones. That will never change. I love the Rolling Stones like so much. I just freak out. Like Bob and I watched Crossfire Hurricane the other night. I'd seen it before, but I get so excited. I'm literally like the girls in the audience who want to jump up and down and scream. I don't know what it is about them, but they just touch me. But, you know, I have to say a very close second is Bruce Springsteen, because over the years, he's had so much music and so many different kinds of music, and it's just so good. You know, I mean, his music is just, it touches my soul.
So, mine too.
Love him.
Mine too.
The Bob, they don't call him Boss for nothing.
No. And when I was in high school, I became obsessed. Mm-hmm. And I remember being a sophomore in high school, and I think The River had come out that year. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was just like so in love, but I had this dream that he came to the house in like a little James Dean, you know, that red jacket James Dean wore.
Yes.
In, I think it was Rebel Without. Okay.
Yeah.
Only Bruce's was like this creamy yellow color, and he knocked on the door. My dad answered, and he asked my dad, I'd really like to marry your daughter. And I was 15. And then he came in, I swear to God, I'll never forget it. And I had a twin bed in this dream, which I didn't. I had a water bed.
Wow. Woo-hoo.
But anyway, so he jumps on the end of the bed, and he's saying, she's the one to me. Wow. I can visualize that. Now that was 40, not 40. It was a long time ago. Yeah. Less than 40 people.
Like 35.
Myself. But anyhow, I've loved him. I've seen him so many times. I've loved him in all of his incarnations.
Yeah.
He is a poet. He's a storyteller. Mm-hmm. I've seen him stand on a stage with the E Street Band. I don't even know how many times. But I've also seen him stand on the stage and do the Ghost of Tom Joad with just him and a guitar.
Wow.
And it's like, it like you said, did you say he touches my soul, or did I envision that?
Yeah, I said it.
He touches my soul. Mm-hmm. He's one of those... Music makes me feel right.
Yeah.
And that's obviously, it does everybody. But Bruce, like, I transcend that shit.
Yes.
I go, I am like, I am one with him and with those words. And I just go on and on. I mean, like, I could sing Nebraska from start to finish. I could sing Darkness on the Edge of Town. I just, it's in me.
Yeah.
We need him right now too.
Yes, we do. And then he did that song right after 9/11 too. I can't remember which song that was.
All of it. It's I got that record.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I just love him. Love him, love him, love him. But I mean, my number one band is always going to be the Rolling Stones. I discovered, just like you say, you became obsessed. I became obsessed with Mick Jagger when I was 13. And it was funny because I had this crush on this guy. You know, there's Mick Jagger is Michael Jagger. So I had this crush on this other guy named Michael. And he was my, like, few years older than me, unlike Mick Jagger, who's older than my father. But for some reason, Michael and Mick Jagger kind of, like, meshed in my mind. And it was funny because I was in Maryland. Michael lived, or his parents had a summer house right next to my grandparents' summer house in Bozeman, Maryland, which is like off the Chesapeake. And so I would see him every summer. And so I had, you know, and he was probably 2 or 3 years older than me, and he was always flirting with me. And I was such a geek. I was such a geek kid. And I loved that he flirted with me, because boys really didn't flirt with me. So I remember the first summer that I really developed a crush on him, I came home to California, and I decided that I was in love with him, and I wrote him a love note on Kermit the Frog. It was Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy paper, and I sent him some kind of love note. And then I remember the Rolling Stones had their, I guess it was the Start Me Up tour. And then I just kind of like, I saw Mick Jagger and he reminded me of Michael. And I don't know, something morphed and happened in my head and I became completely obsessed with both of them. And I remember my father making jokes that, you know, that my crush was older than he is. And it's like, I don't know why. I mean, I guess I know why I crushed on Mick Jagger. It wasn't because necessarily of the way he looked. It's just because he's so charismatic. And for anybody, for anybody who's never seen this movie, he's in this movie called, oh God, what's it called, Bob? Man of Elysian Fields.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The man, I think he's the man of Elysian Fields. And so Mick Jagger, basically, his character in that is kind of like a pimp for male prostitutes, right? But high end.
Nice.
And there is a scene he does that just blows you. He's so good as an actor. He does it with, what is that woman's name? She was with... oh God, I can't think of anybody's name. She's the one who
describe what she does.
She was the one. She was the one who used to go out. I can't think of anyone's name right now. Let me just say that there is a scene with her. It's a scene with a woman, and he's in love with her. I won't say much more, but his reaction is so small, right? You know, it's like he does so very little, but conveys so much. It's like, oh my God. And just from that one scene
alone. Is it
alone,
Angelica Houston?
Yes,
yeah.
Angelica Houston. It blows my mind every time I think about it. I mean, the movie is good, but Mick Jagger is stupendous. I mean, he's just unbelievable. Highly recommend it. Yeah. You know, Bob and I watched it not too long ago, and Andy Garcia is the star. And, you know, Bob pointed out he wasn't so thrilled with Garcia, which I see what he means.
Yeah, Garcia was completely forgettable, and they should have made a whole movie around Mick Jagger's character. It's far more interesting, far more worth watching. You could actually edit down Mick Jagger's story and turn it into its own short film.
Yeah, he's really amazing.
Okay,
just fascinating.
I'm gonna immediately watch it.
Yeah, it's a good
one. That's on tap for this weekend. You know, Andy Garcia is a total
jerk,
right winger.
Oh, well, that's not surprising. Well, you know what? I used to work for an eyewear company. And one of the people that I sold, a business that I sold the glasses to, said that Andy was a customer and that he was a complete asshole. Yeah. That's sad to know.
Not surprised.
Oh, that brings me to, I don't even remember what we were talking about before, but oh my God, have you heard about the Scott Baio stuff?
Oh my God, I was just going to bring up Scott Baio. We're so like-minded. The part about how he fingered the 14-year-old?
Yeah. Did you see his Facebook Live?
No. Oh, I read it. I read the transcript, though. I'm going to prove that she's lying. You didn't prove shit.
He had a bunch of papers. But he had a bunch of papers. Yeah.
What, that said I didn't finger her somebody?
Well, it was so pathetic because he's sitting there like he's doing the presidential address, right? And
his wife sitting next to him?
Yeah, his wife sitting
with
his
balls in a vice.
Well, the thing is he got a date wrong, right? He said 2017, and you can hear his wife go, 2012. And like she's whispering shit when he gets things wrong. But he's got all these papers in front of him that are supposedly proof that he never did anything with Nicole, or if he did, she was of age. And he's explaining how, which by the way, he blocked me on Twitter because he's such a fucking snowflake. But anyway,
God, I love that you did that. I'm so proud of you.
He, like, one of the things that was proof that she was lying is that she went to dinner or was friends, like went to dinner with him and his wife, or went to his house, and that his wife and him were friends. And it's like, that proves fucking nothing. It just, you know, I mean, look, I don't know. I wasn't there, right? I have a tendency to believe Nicole Eggert, but I don't know because I wasn't there. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. And the reason why is because he's such a fucking dick. And I know that you can be a fucking dick and not be a rapist. So I get that. But I worked on Diagnosis Murder. I mean, I was just an extra. But I worked on Diagnosis Murder. I think it was like in 96 or something, 95. And it was a fun day. I was dressed as a nurse and I was hanging out with the crew. In fact, I was having such a great time with the crew, and the crew got in trouble because they were all being so friendly to me. And it was like, this is stupid. Anyway, I remember they got reprimanded because they were, because I was hanging out with them. And anyway, so Scott Baio comes onto the scene. And he gets in his chair and he's with his makeup artists, and we had absolutely no personal interaction. He didn't speak to me. We didn't speak to each other, but it was completely evident that he was a monumental asshole. Such a mm-hmm. jerk. I hated him from that. Like, I just could tell that he was a dick. And, you know, and so it's like, I can imagine what she's saying is true. And if, and providing it is true, of course it makes sense that somebody in her position in later, you know, like later in her life would still be conflicted and not really understand how to deal with things. Evidently she, this was confirmed by somebody, and it was somebody who was her friend, but it was confirmed that she told Scott Baio, because this is something he alleged, that she said to Scott that she wanted him to take her virginity because she wanted to be good, right? When it came time to being in love. That doesn't mean in my mind that, I guess he fingered her first. She was
14.
Yeah. So, but when she wanted to lose her virginity, she was older. So he had already fingered her at this point. And so I think what that tells me is that she was confused. She was young and confused, and she didn't really quite understand how to process what was happening. And because he had made a sexual contact with her earlier, I think probably in her mind, she figured, well, you know, we have this kind of thing, and if I lose my virginity with him, I'll know what I'm doing and this and that. You know, but it's like to point at someone and say, hey, you know, she came to me wanting to have sex after he put his finger in her when she was 14 is no way proof that he's innocent.
If
all this went down, and it's just the whole thing makes me sick. I can't stand him. He's such a jerk. Ugh. So I don't know what's going to happen. I guess he's getting his own reality show soon, and I don't know what's going to happen with that, but he doesn't deserve it. And just another kind of funny thing, her mother, Nicole Eggert's mother, was my agent for a while, and my mother's agent too.
Really?
she was kind of like the agent who never got me any work, but still. Interesting.
But was she
interesting.
A nice person?
She was friendly. I mean, you know what? There were the agency that I belonged to that was so freaking long ago, I can't even remember the name. I know her mother's name was Gina, but I don't remember her last name. It was these two women. So one represented the dramatic side, and then Gina represented the commercial side. So the woman who took me on was the one who represented the dramatic side. And I went over to Gina and I was like, hey, you know, I want to do commercials too. So, you know, I mean, it was just such a long time ago. Like I said, I don't even remember their names, but I think that was the last, those were the last two agents I ever had as, you know, in the whole acting world. So, but it was just kind of interesting. And I do remember too, Nicole Eggert was, had gained a bunch of weight. And she did, I think it was like in 2012, she did a parody where she was dressed in her Baywatch bathing suit, but she was, you know, I don't know, 30, 40 pounds heavier. And I guess she had been criticized for her weight gain. So her response was...
Of course she was criticized.
Yeah, so her response was to put her bathing suit on and go kind of do a parody as, you know, heavier Nicole, which I thought was cool because she was just basically saying, fuck you, everybody.
Good for her. Screw them.
Yeah.
You know, part of me, you know, and I joke because I said, yeah, I'm comfort eating, which it's absolutely true. But, and, you know, gosh, I'd love to, you know, drop a couple of LBs just so my jeans fit better, whatever. But at the same time, it's like, I am this, and this is me right now. And there ain't a damn thing wrong with it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just... Yeah, like last night, stupid Sarah Huckabee Sanders said Nancy Pelosi should smile more. You know,
I know. I'm like biting my tongue.
We get enough of that. We get enough of that as it is. Why would...
Maybe she should stop working for Satan.
That's exactly right. Is that rubbing off on her? Like, honestly, I just... It must be, right?
God, she's just... it's like when I think of her, I start going, it's like I don't even know what to fucking say. She's so crude and she's so unbelievably adept at lying and has absolutely no soul. How can she have a soul? Does mm-hmm. she believe what she Whoa. Says? I think she does. She's so defensive.
I don't know. I don't know that she believes it or if she's just pure evil, because how does everybody yeah. else in that organization know that... you know, they're all just spending their days trying to cover up mm-hmm. the wrongdoing. And I mean, wrongdoing, that's such an understatement. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The treason.
And so the treason, the Russian involvement that yeah. apparently is happening this week.
Yes. It's been happening and it's going to continue to happen.
Yeah. I don't believe for a second that she doesn't know. I just don't.
I just don't understand.
I think she's evil too.
Yeah, she is.
And she's raising children.
Yeah. Well, this whole Republican Party just being complicit, playing along, it's just depressing. It's so depressing. And I, you know, all I can say is the other day when, God, I don't even know what was a Monday and whatever news was breaking at that point, which was horrible and scary, which frankly, because we get so much of it, I can't even remember what it was. But it was, people kept asking me if I was scared, and I was talking to my mom and she, you know, she said that she was scared. And so I said, well, I'm scared too, for obvious reasons. But I also think that, you know, every super nation, I guess, if you want to call it, every nation has had all kinds of horrible things that they've overcome. So I think that, you know, I mean, oh, I think one of the, my mom said something like, look, he's dismantling everything and, you know, we're still going to have a country, but we're not going to have the same country. And I said, well, that's not necessarily a bad thing. As long as, you know, as long as Democrats get it back and as long as they do the right thing when they get it back and doing the right mm-hmm. thing. And that's what we were basically talking about right before we ended the last show. Is what we have to do as far as cleanup. You know, there's a lot to clean up, and I think we have to amend the Constitution in order to, you know, prevent somebody like Donald Trump. I think we should get rid of the Electoral College. I think that, you know, certain traditions I hope can come back, but maybe this is going to pave the way to single payer. Maybe this is or at least a conversation that's positive about single payer as opposed to we can't do it. You know, it's like, yes, we can do it. We can do anything we mm-hmm. fucking want to do. It's just a matter of figuring out a way. You know, we've got hopefully people like Jess Phoenix, you know, scientists and wonks in there who can figure out how we can get single payer, who can figure out how we're going to get the Equal Rights Amendment ratified. And so maybe the country won't be exactly the same as it was prior to Trump. Hopefully we can make it better. You know, we can remember the traditions that we revered and that we held and, you know, and go back to those. But Trump did leave a stain on this country. I think that there's an opportunity with all of that negative, providing we win and providing, you know, we got to get education back into schools. You know, so much education funding is cut by Republicans. It's never replaced and it continues to degrade. We need to teach civics in schools. We need to just get our education level up, you know, higher than it is and continue to grow. And we have to make sure that people vote. We have to figure out, I think we should have like voting week or voting month or whatever. And, you know, and just... we can change things. So it's like, although mm-hmm. there is all kinds of damage and we're going to be experiencing painful, you know, whether it's the economy, shit that's going to happen with the economy, we're going to deal with those repercussions. We're going to have a lot to clean up. But I think that cleanup provides us with that opportunity. I hope we can do it. I mean, I know I sound like a Pollyanna, but because we've got all the... you know, all these new people running. And it's just amazing because like Rachel Maddow has done a couple of different times, those charts about like, for instance, in 20, I think it was like in the primaries in 2010, there's a certain amount of candidates who were running and they started running in 2009, right? So I think there were like 70 some Republicans or 80 some Republicans versus like 40 who threw their hats in the ring, 40 Democrats. So now cut to, you know, I think it was last year, and then including into this year, or whatever it was, last year, however many Democrats threw their hats into the ring to run, where it's like over 300. And yeah, not only is does that dwarf the number of Republicans, freaking Republicans are retiring left and right. We just learned that Trey Gowdy retired today, or is going to retire. He announced his retirement.
Yeah. And what is that? I'm glad you brought that up, because I didn't want to forget that before we finish this up today. Do you think they're all just guilty? Like, that's where my mind goes immediately. Why is Paul Ryan considering dropping out? You know, what are their ties? They were the most vehement protesters to anything Democratic. Paul Ryan and those non-existent pursed lips sitting behind Barack Obama at the State of the Union, refusing to stand up. And then last night, there he is behind the succubus at the freaking pulpit. And he and Mike Pence, like, the look on Mike Pence's face was like, it was like he was orgasming almost, you know? And then, and Paul Ryan's like, damn right, I'm so proud of you, Donnie. Pursed lips. But maybe he's going to go. What does he have to hide? What does Trey Gowdy, Benghazi guy, what's he hiding? Why isn't he running again?
I think it's a combination of what you're just saying. I mean, like, look, the first of all, we know the Russians hacked the RNC. So there's what, you know, there's a possibility that they've got compromat on these people. And I don't know what that exactly means for, you know, whatever decisions that they make, but there's that thing. There's also the idea that some of them, I think, are retiring because they know they can't win. And then I think that some of them may be retiring just because, like you said, there's just something. There's something that they don't want people to know, or I don't know. I don't know. But what I do know is it means the Republican Party is in free fall. And, you know, I mean, I think somebody like Trey Gowdy will just hop on over to the oligarch side. You know, he's just going to start working with the oligarchs. He'll have the opportunity to, you know, go to whether it's Koch brothers or whatever oligarch they want to serve. They can still be effective. So it, to me, it's like when I see people doing the happy dance because these guys are Republicans. I mean, because these Republicans are retiring. Yes, it's good because it opens up a door for another Democrat. It doesn't mean they're going to win, but it opens up an opportunity for them. I mean, they had the opportunity either way, but I think when these guys step down, it makes it that much easier for a Democrat to get in. But, you know, I mean, I think that no matter what, we're always going to deal. I'm going to recommend this book again to everybody. It's called, it's a book called Wrapped in the Flag by Claire Connor. And Claire's father was one of the founding members of the John Birch Society, along with Fred Koch. So that's Father Koch. So this is something, you know, I've talked about this before, but Claire gives a great overview of what it was like to grow up in the John Birch Society. And I think she wrote this book in like 2012 or 2013. And you could just see that, you know, I guess it was like in the 50s this started. You know, over the years, over the decades, there's money. Obviously, Koch brothers are just so wealthy, it's unbelievable. So there's a lot of money there. They didn't really gain a legislative power, the John Birch Society types, until 2010 or 2011 when the Tea Party, who's basically an offshoot of the John Birch Society, that's what they were. They bought John Birch, now they're Tea Party, so they gained legislative power in the 2010 elections. They started implementing all of their shit in 2011. We saw women's rights eroded, rolled back, among other things. I highly recommend this book because it gives you a very clear picture of today's Republican Party. And it's like, it just totally makes sense that you know, you had this kind of like extremist right winger view, which is now taken over. And it's and the Kochs have over time just slowly done their thing. They've got they're so wealthy. So that's what worries me, is that people like Trey Gowdy is going to be working like kind of behind the scenes.
I have some breaking news if you want it.
Yes.
Now.
Bring it.
apparently Donald Trump asked Rod Rosenstein for a loyalty pledge, asked him if he was on my side, quote unquote.
When?
This is CNN just broke the story.
But I mean, when did
now.
He ask, do you know? December,
I think it was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's what I just read.
Yep.
Wow.
I'm sorry it popped up.
Crazy shit, man.
Shit is hitting the fan, people.
Yeah it is.
The FBI has grave concerns about Devin Nunes' memo. Okay? Yeah. This is fucking real.
Yeah.
Our democracy is in jeopardy.
Yeah.
And the complicit GOP that sit back and applaud and give standing ovations to a man who is ruining America. They are complicit and they have a hand in actively ruining America as well. And so fuck them and fuck all of them who are trying to hide it. And Devin Nunes is going down. These people are going to prison.
Yes. Yes, they are. And I just want to remind everybody, because everybody like focuses on Mueller, and Mueller's big, but we've also got Schneiderman.
Baby.
You know, I mean, I don't know about indicting a sitting president, but it doesn't matter, because when he's out, Schneiderman is all over Trump's
That's
ass.
That's exactly right.
So
that's exactly. I don't even care if Trump is indicted. I just want him gone. And it seems to me like first I was hoping that he'd be gone because, oh, my God, the charges Mueller's going to bring against him. Of course, the GOP is going to fall in line. They're going to impeach him.
Yeah.
But they won't.
No, they
I'll
won't.
Be surprised if they do. Let's put it that way. I'll be surprised if they do.
But you know what's
but
awesome?
We've got 2018 elections coming up, and we will take him out.
We will. And what's also awesome is that, let's just say, okay, Schneiderman may not indict the sitting president, but he can indict and probably arrest or get a conviction for Jared and for Don, because they both fall in his realm. He's in New York. They live in New York. So he can go after them and put them in jail if Trump is still in prison.
For crimes they committed in New York.
Yes.
And so tell me if I'm right about this. And Bob, please chime in. But Kimberly, you know, the two of you, I want you to tell me if this is correct. So let's say we wait until 2018. We take back the House. We take back the Senate. Trump goes bye-bye because he's impeached, right? Then, or maybe he resigns because I'm going to resign and save my kids because of these horrible charges that are being brought against them. Okay, great. Now he's a private citizen again. Can Schneiderman?
Yes.
Put his ass in prison?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
That's what I'm saying. It's like no matter what Mueller does, if we're stuck with Trump, even mm-hmm. to 2020, right?
Right.
Yes.
Oh no.
Trump can go to jail. He's a private, he loses the, let's just say a Republican.
Right. As a private citizen, right. He can go to jail.
He'll go to jail.
Right.
So we may have to wait for a little while.
Because Schneidy's got, yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's fine. I'm willing to wait.
I mean, God only knows what Mueller can bring to the table at that point too, because I think Mueller's only going to bring obstruction. I don't know that he's necessarily going to bring money laundering, which he may, but to the Republicans.
Right, but those that team he's assembled is like they are money laundering experts.
Yeah. But it just I think that while Trump is in place, if the Republicans refuse to do anything, if I were Mueller, and of course I'm not, and I don't know anything about how FBI investigations.
I don't even know how the law works, but
so
okay.
It's really easy for me to sit on the couch in Bob's office and spout off about all the shit, but it's like maybe Mueller can just like hold on to some of those to the money laundering and stuff and wait till he's not the president anymore and then go after him. I don't know how it works, but you know what? That fucking guy's going to jail.
That's right. And so my question was, of course I'm waiting for Schneiderman and he's amazing, but I didn't know if, once Mueller doesn't try to indict him, can then Schneiderman just say, you know what? That's fine. I'll take that
yes.
New York.
And they are
stuff,
working together.
And I'll indict his ass.
Yeah.
And that's right. Okay.
So
I just want to make sure. I want to make sure all my bases are covered, because you know my dream, aside from ending racism now, is that Donald Trump goes to jail.
Yeah. Me too.
Jail,
I think a lot
it's
of us,
what's for dinner.
Yeah, jail is what's for dinner, and that's what a lot of us want. All right. So we're gonna wrap it up today. But this was cool, and I'm glad
always
we had an opportunity.
Damn.
to talk to Jess.
Woo! Hey!
You just have to be more excited about things, Stephanie. All right, everybody, take care.